Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy.
Good morning. It is February 16th, 2023. It is Thursday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by The Magic of Trees by Jennifer Marie Baumgartner. Jessica Marie Baumgartner. I do that every time. We once filmed a Christmas episode. And I called Jessica Jennifer so many times, I had to dub over the episode because the episode was all complete with all the music and transitions, and I just had to dub over myself. It was nuts. Anyways, let's get your day going with a little magic. Our quote of the day is, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." By Dr. Martin Luther King. All right, so we are touching on soup, and listener Lilith writes, "My favorite is butternut squash or autumn soup, which includes a little acorn squash. Never a squash eater in my life. When I moved to the mountain a couple of decades ago, I started to eat seasonally for the first time in my life, Florida raised. To me now, it's sort of the recognition of fall. As for magic, I make all my own broths, normally chicken. This is where the magic happens. Herbs from my garden, all day simmer, bottled health and happiness waiting for it to be added to something. My last broth was made from my Yule bird." Lefty adds, "I love butternut squash soup. I once used it as a base for banishing a spell, and boy, did it work fast and furious. It was my butternut squash banish the bullshit soup with bay leaves and black pepper. I'm trying to remember if there was anything else. It was delicious and effective." I love butternut squash soup. I once made, this was like when I was a little baby witch in my 20s, we had like a coven get together and we all made like a fall related dish, and I made like a squash and apple soup. And then one of my coven mates made candied pecans, and candied pecans in your squash soup. Game changer. Game changer. It was delicious. So Leandra from the Magic Kitchen shares this. "Make it a magical recipe. Squash is one of the key elements in the story of the sisters. Squash is called the sustaining sister and is well known for its attribute of prosperity and nourishment. Squash is also believed to be useful in deepening relationships with friends, family, and lovers. In times of turmoil, use squash to get people on your side when the situation calls for it." I love. All right, moving into some headlines. This comes to us from une.edu, University of New England. "Which theory do you buy? A history class debates causes of the 1692 witchcraft hysteria in Salem." One of my favorite topics. "It is not unusual for witches to be top of mind on Halloween, and for the most of us, Halloween-inspired thoughts of witches conjure images of cartoonish figures from child stories and movies. Haggard old women with pointy black hats, wart-covered faces, and broomsticks in hand. Not so for students in one particular class, taught by Elizabeth DeWolf, professor of history. Members of her What Really Happened? Women, Witches, and Witch Hunts class were indeed thinking about witches on October 31st, but in an entirely different and far more serious context. Gathered in the St. Francis Room on the afternoon of October 31st, the class of 14 students grouped into five teams presented a modified Oxford-style debate to the UNE community to put forth possible historical explanation for the tragic events that occurred in the early 1690s in Salem, Massachusetts, events involving the investigations and persecutions of people suspected of being witches and resulting in the imprisonment of more than 150 people and the execution of 20. Salem 1692, a debate, opened with a brief historical overview by DeWolf before students began presentations on five different well-researched theories as the cause of the Salem witch hunts and subsequent court trials. Madison Kruger, Samantha Luque, Kayla Medallo, members of Team Psychology, argued that Salem's witch hysteria was a result of the accuser's psychological disorders and their actions stemmed from defense mechanisms, namely displacement, projection, and repression, all of which the team claimed led to accusation of others that were legitimized through the irrational and dysfunctional reasons of groupthink. That's actually typically my theory as well. Will asserted that the events in Salem were born out of economic conditions. They explained that the period immediately preceding the witch hunts was one of economic turmoil. Crops in the area had failed, resulting in financial stress, they contended, led to arguments between families, primarily between the relatively poor farming families in Salem Village and the wealthier families in Salem Town. Interfamily strife stemming from financial hardships led to accusations of witchcraft they maintained. Emily Newborough, Tommy Wall, Kaylee Blake on Team Tituba posted that it was the presence of Tituba, a Caribbean native slave, in the household where three young girls first demonstrated quote-unquote bewitched behaviors that enabled the theory of witchcraft to take hold in Salem. They reasoned that because natives, I don't know what they mean by that, were long associated with witchcraft by the Puritans, and Tituba had issued a likely forced confession to putting a spell on the girls, she was primarily responsible for the mass hysteria that ensued. Hallucinations resulting from a medical malady was the cause of the frenzy Salem, claimed Team Medical. Team members claimed that rye was the principal grain ingested in Salem. Oh yeah, the fungus, the ergot fungus theory. Not a fan. Team Warfare insisted that at the very root of Salem's witch preoccupation was King William's War, which was an armed battle between England and France and New England colonies over the control of North America. Taking a comprehensive view, the team conceded that all the other theories suggested during the debate had merit, but asserted that every one of them was dependent, at least in one part, on the recent warfare that had ravaged the area, noting that all three of the bewitched girls, whose behavior first roused suspicions of witchcraft, were war refugees. So, Team Warfare, they said, won, which I think it won because it encompassed all the theories. So, like, I don't know if that counts. But I'm typically team psychological and team economics, and that, like, it was just a really high-stress time. And remember, the girls were children. And one, to be a woman was bad enough, to be a child. This was before, like, children had rights, you know, being a child female was horrible. And I'm typically team psychological and team economic. I am not team ergot. I don't know why. That just, like, it just feels like an episode of House to me, you know. And I actually think that happened on House. Like, I feel like there was an episode of House on ergot, and it just feels like such a stretch. Anyways, love that article. Anytime we can educate people on Salem, I always really, really love it. So I hope you manage through that with me. All right, witches, I'm going to throw this over to our moon correspondent. And after this break, we will talk more.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Thursday, February 16th. The waning crescent moon works diligently in Capricorn today. Here, the moon squares Jupiter. When the moon squares Jupiter, we can sometimes feel a little overwhelmed. In this case, we may feel overwhelmed by the task at hand. It can feel as if it's bigger than it really is. If you feel this way, don't panic. Take a look at the overall project and break it into small, accomplishable pieces. Reward yourself every time you finish one small piece. You'll be surprised by how much you've accomplished by the end of the day. Your daily moon mantra is, sooner or later, those who win are those who think they can. This has been your Daily Moon Mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you that you are in charge of your own destiny.
The Magic of Trees is not just a book on tree magic. It is about drawing on the strength of forests and tree energy to better connect with ourselves, other people, and the world around us. Each chapter reinforces meditations, spells, and rituals that will reconnect humanity with its roots at every stage of life. These practices take a hands-on approach to life and spiritual work. They lead to individual self-awareness and fulfillment through healthy natural practices. Plus, this text has the added benefit of fine-tuning spiritual tree connections, which never stop growing. Find the magic of trees wherever books are sold.
All right, we are back. Fun fact, there's a Mardi Gras parade happening literally as we speak. We're in the 2 weeks of, it's hell, but in the best way. It's good hell, is that a thing? Basically, we're in like the 2 weeks of Mardi Gras hell right now, where like every single day there's a parade outside of my house. And like, if I want to go anywhere, I have to be really, really strategic with it. So I texted a friend and I was like, hey, you want to get breakfast? Because last night we had like our first big float parade and I had like a Mardi Gras hangover, which means my body was sore and like I'm tired and I maybe had like a glass too much wine and I'm just like, And I text her, I'm like, you want to get breakfast? And she's like, can you get here? And I was like, oh no, there's a parade. So I like put on my clothes so fast and I just started running because I have to outrun the parade or else I can't cross the street. So I managed, I got across the street and then we had breakfast and I had to stay out at least like 3 hours to wait for the parade to pass so I could like sprint back across the street to my house. And it's going to be like that for like 2 weeks. So every single thing I do, it has to be very, very strategic on can I get away from my home and can I get back to my home? It's a lot of fun. I say with sarcasm, but it's also Mardi Gras. So you can't really, I don't know. It's both good and bad. That's why it's fun hell. You know what I mean? Anyways, we have a question of the day. April from our Patreon wants us to talk about Aquarius. She is an Aquarius sun, a Valentine's Day baby, and she loves learning about Aquarius themes. So we're actually currently in the age of Aquarius. So let's talk about it. And you have a whole song, April. You have a whole song. Age of Aquarius. Okay. So Nylon, we talk about the age of Aquarius. And let's see what they say. Since 2020, Aquarius has gained momentum as an astrological talking point, with the year's great conjunction in the air sign initiating a heady Saturn in Aquarius saga and the impending arrival of Pluto Aquarius in 2023. Cliched wails from Hair ring through the land, harking the dawn of the age of Aquarius. But what exactly is an astrological age anyways? And what happens when this mythic edition begins in earnest? We talk about it. So hang on tight because this is where it gets a little heady. In the study of the Earth itself, astrologers observe the ecliptic, or the Earth's orbit around the sun, along with the celestial equator, an imagined extension of the Earth's equator into space, right? the intersection points of the ecliptic and celestial equator are equinoxes. So because of the Earth's imperfect orbit, equinoxes change position gradually, moving into different signs over approximately 2,000 years. A complete cycle takes about 26,000 years to complete and is known as a great or platonic year. So you can imagine these equinox intersections as a starting point of the Earth's orbit slowly moves backwards over time, about 1 degree every 72 years. So these 2,000-year intervals in each sign are known as great months or ages. So each with their own stories of human change and development. But here's the gag. The equinox points proceed backwards, meaning that we're currently ending the age of Pisces and moving fast into the age of Aquarius. Because of the slow advancement through the ages, they don't end and begin precisely, but slowly shift and change form. So the age of Pisces is speculated to have began around the time of Christ, accumulating around 2100 and 2160 CE. Yet some believe the age of Aquarius is already here. In his Complete Astrology, Alan Oaken writes that the current transition between ages, much like the period between childhood and puberty, the process is really gradual. So today, we find that we live in the legacy of Pisces with the promise of Aquarius. So what are the natures of the Piscean and Aquarian ages, and how do we know we've crossed from one to another? So how do we know, right? We have these theories of are we still in Pisces? Are we now in Aquarius? And like they said, it happens gradually. So how do we know, based off what's happening, whether we're in Pisces or Aquarius? So broadly speaking, each double millennium sums up the themes of its designated sign, just like how Aries are said to be blah, blah, blah. These ages are said to have specific themes, right? As the people are expected to have certain themes, the ages are supposed to have certain themes based off the sign. So, Astrolata notes how the age of Gemini, which was 6,000 to 4,000 BCE, awakened an explosion of emerging written language and recorded glyphs along the development of new trades, crafts, and skills. In Complete Astrology, I love this book, Oaken centers the age of Taurus, which was about 4,200 BCE and 2100 BCE, around the tilling of fields and development of agriculture, super societies like ancient Egypt, Greece, and India. Out of Egypt, the Israelites grabbed the ram's horns and initiated the Age of Aries. Age of Aries was 2000 BCE to 1 BCE, a time of bloody conquest defined by Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, and the brutal rise of monotheism. So, now we get to Common Era, right? We're starting at one, which all makes sense to me, I guess, because of Aries. So we're now at one, right? Which is the age of Pisces. So this is Jesus Christ and Judas. Of course, for all the empathy Pisces commands, it's still a sign of suffering, imprisonment, and delusion. So this new civilization would indeed be more united than ever before, and therefore more vulnerable to the unprecedented globalized monstrosity, the mass oppression spearheaded by the Catholic Church, annihilating diseases like the plague, and the large-scale genocides of the last 200 years. And yet, the world is bigger and more connected than ever. Every smartphone is a key to an immortal, incalculable catalog of art, culture, history, thought, and expression. This hyper-exposure to everything, everywhere, all at once, has likely rendered all of us addicts to the drip of Novocaine for the soul. But suffice it to say, we're a part of something bigger now. So let's talk about the Age of Aquarius. So when is the Age of Aquarius coming? Astrologers argue about when the age of Pisces ends. The calculated launch of Age of Aquarius should be the 22nd century, around 2160. And yet 2021's seven planet stellium in Aquarius led other theorists to believe that we've arrived. Like, we're already there. We're like premature babies. We're ready, right? So certainly anyone born during the alien awakening will be children of tomorrow. Regardless of when exactly the story changes, it's clear that we've been in transition phase between Pisces and Aries for quite a long time. Many cite the discovery of Aquarius's ruling planet Uranus in 1781 as the launch point into this integration of technological splendor with communal possibility. Astrologer Ruby McAllister writes that the years since Uranus' arrival has brought forth a flourishing of science, technology, philosophy, literature, music, social opportunities, and virtually every aspect of human life, which exploded Western civilization towards liberation, freedom, and choice. Aquarius governs mass communication, Oaken writes. The only methods available for dissemination of information prior to the discovery of Uranus were by foot, human or animal, ship, mouth, or pen. The past few centuries have delivered a quantum leap forward, cyber utopianism, with the past few decades specifically blasting us towards the event horizon. Youth culture, which is a hallmark of Aquarius, has never been more powerful. So look to the contemporary rave culture as a perfect blending of ecstatic tribalism and technological innovation. So Piscean consciousness is the end game of the zodiac, a merged mass union of souls through time and space in the midst of an opioid crisis, corporate contest for streaming eyeballs, and the upending perpetuation of religious bloodshed. It's clear we can't handle the current, and it's not even at half stream yet. Oaken writes that the elements required to raise the general level of consciousness of the Earth and its inhabitants are not readily available to present-day humanity. The proper physical, mental, and spiritual vehicles, which have to be developed through the long evolutionary process. Only Aquarius can build these vessels, spaceships, and time machines to deliver us. So are we in Aquarius? Like, that's the question. So the Age of Aquarius will shift the human picture on ideological grounds, rethinking our concepts of blood, relationality, statehood, finance, and value, right? So speaking, like, it's, oh my gosh, like, it kind of feels like we're already there, right? So like any sign, Aquarius does have a dark side. What are the ethics of technological progress? What is preventing our ideal society from becoming one of exclusion and manipulation? Already, China's developing social credit score, and our fast progress into Gattaca's reality of genetic engineering indicate a disconnect between ethical reality and authoritarian opportunism. So indeed, for all of its affirmations of individuality and human rights, Aquarius is a global sign, concerning with organizing the populace at large. Perhaps we'll see the rise of queer tribal states as depicted in the contemporary X-Men comics, or inevitably we're in for more bureaucracy to totalitarianism. Ugh, I hate that word. Totalitarianism. And one fits all, like fascism, forcing us to conform to the sake of some grim greater good. So it's just kind of this idea of like, are we there yet? Honestly, just based off the like technological stuff, it kind of sounds like we are. I hope you guys all made it through that. It was really heady and very like astrologically dense, but I think it was written in a way that was very consumable. And I hope that it was helpful. All right, witches. We are wrapping up this episode of The Witch Daily Show. Oh my gosh, that was such a good elevator voice. At least it sounded good to me. Anyways, I want to give a shout out to Kim Bose. Kim, you badass pretty woodland fairy. Karen Walker. Karen, you badass talented garden nymph. And finally, Vanessa. Vanessa, you loyal, luminous tropical fish. Thank you three so much for being Patreon supporters. I really, really appreciate it. And before we leave, we do have a card pull today. Our card today is Alchemy from the Metaphysical Cannabis Oracle. When this card appears, you are being reminded that you always have a choice. Decisions come before actions, and the bong represents weighing your alternatives. If this card has come to you, commune with the plant spirit pairing to determine progress, plan the future, and find the ambition to make it happen as fast as you'd like. All right, witches, that's all I've got for you today. Our spring fiction book club poll is posted on Patreon today, so check it out. We're going to be doing the poll, and then we will start in spring, so April. April is when book club is, but we're just preparing for it now. We're doing a poll to do our pick, and then I'll announce the pick in March, and we'll start our book club in April. All right, witches, don't forget any books, decks, headlines, sources, anything we've referenced today can be found in the podcast episode description or witchpod.com, and we will talk again tomorrow.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old in my home state of Arizona in 1994. It was not a decision that I made lightly, but I have never for one moment doubted that it was the right decision for me. But so much has changed in Arizona and many other states since then. If I were that same 15-year-old in Arizona today, legally, I would have to get parental consent. I would be forced to undergo a medically unnecessary ultrasound, go to a state-mandated in-person counseling session designed solely to shame me into changing my mind, and then take a state-mandated 24-hour time out to make sure I really know what I wanted. And finally, I would be forced to give the state a reason why. Well, here is mine. It is my body, not the state's. Women and their doctors are the ones that are in the best position to make informed decisions about what is best for them. No one else. No bill that criminalizes abortion will stop anyone from making this incredibly painful decision. These bans will not stop abortion from happening, but they will drive women and girls and people into the shadows, which is what this has always been about, shaming and controlling women's bodies. In the week after I shared my story on my show, women were coming up to me in the street, in the supermarket, at my gym, with tears in their eyes, thanking me for my bravery. But the word brave didn't sit right with me. Why is it brave to speak to an experience that millions of people around the world throughout history have gone through? And then I realized it is considered brave because as women, we have been taught to feel shame about our bodies since birth. I am so sad that we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements because the why doesn't matter. It should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this country that calls itself free, and choices that a human being makes about their own bodies should not be legislated by strangers who can't possibly know or understand each individual's circumstances or beliefs. I'm here today to help destigmatize a legitimate medical procedure and continue to encourage women not to allow themselves to be shamed for their choices. And finally, I am here today for my two little girls, Birdie and Cricket. My dream for them is that they will live in a world in which women are truly equal with complete control over their own reproductive health. That is the dream I hold for all people, regardless of their privilege or parents or what state they live in. That dream is slipping further and further from reality with every ban passed. I hope that you, our elected leaders, can help us reverse the tide. Thank you. I look forward to today's discussion.